राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी जय जय राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी चन बल्लभ जय गिरवर भाई जय गिरवर भाई जय जय गोपी जन जय गिरवर धारी जय गिरवर धारी जय यशोदना जय ब्रज जन रंजन जय ब्रज जन रंजन जय रवन छारी जय कुंज बिहारी जय जय ज्ञान नथी रवन छारी जय कुंज बिहारी जय जय राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी जय जय गोपीजन बल्लभ जय गिरवर धारी जय यशोद नंदन जय ब्रज जन रंजन जय जन तीर मन चारी जय ओर बिहारी जय जन तीर मन चारी जय हरि जय राधा माधव जय कुंज बिहारी 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 jaya Radha Madhava jaya Ure Yori jaya Radha Madhava jaya Ure Yori jaya Radha Madhava jaya Ure Yori jaya kunja yori jaya vishnu barbara namisa parivrajik sarya satrasta sisi marizdavanga sisi bhakti dhananda swami prabhupad ki jaya Srimad-Bhagavatam ki jaya, Samadhera-Vakta-Pridhmi ki, glories to the assembled devotees, glories to the assembled devotees, glories to the assembled devotees, glories to Shri Guru, Shri Gauranga, Vujabarai, Gizbhazani, Vujabarai, Srimati Gautam, Swamani, Tamari, Namaste, Saraswati, Devi, Gauravani, Vijarini, Shri 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 Vati, Pashtachari, Shatarini, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Ajnatamarangasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurim Militana Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest ignorance. My spiritual master opened my eyes with the torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Today, before I start, if I could just take the liberty. About a year ago, in Mayapur, a group of us devotees who were involved in creative arts established a creative arts initiative. It's called Vande, which stands for Vaishnava Arts for a New Devotional Era. And it is Ganagamya's with us on board, but we have some core members. Vasudev, who's from France, a filmmaker. Damodar Pandit, who's a fine artist from Australia. Hari Das, who's a musician from the UK, is myself, and Subhadi Krishna, who's here from Florida. And our objective with this initiative is to promote the fine arts that have to do with Krishna, and to create a kind of a camaraderie amongst us, and also to get a little organized. That's a good idea. And which will hopefully attract some patrons of the arts. And it is our hope that in an organized way, systematic way, we can promote Krishna consciousness more through a cultural direction. So, with that in mind, if anybody's interested to play a part in this, I'm going to be around for the day, let me know. And if anybody has got some personal experience with Srila Prabhupada, who gave some direction in the fine arts, anything to do with arts, creative arts, whether it be the doll making from Bengal, or whether it be the theater, or dance, or music, or you know, sculpture, anything like we need the Janavas and the Toshan Krishnas, you know, people from the traveling road show. We need to interview you because we plan to put out a book called Prabhupada on the Arts. What do you think? So anybody who likes to help in any capacity in that way, please let us know. Okay, so we're looking at the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th chapter, the atrocities of, or do you say atrocities here? Atrocities of King Kamsa. And it's text 39, I think. Is it, or what is it? 42? Okay, we're going to flip it over. 42. Okay. So here we go. Sahi sarva surab yaksho. Yasurab dvid guha shayaha. Tamula devata sarva. Shishvara sa chaturmukha. Ayam vai tad vidho payo. Yadrishinam vihinshanam. Someone else. Sahi sarva surat yaksho. Thank you very much. Let's look at the word by word. Saha, he, Lord Vishnu. He, indeed. Sarvasura Adyakshaha, the leader of all the demigods. He, indeed. Asura Dvit, the enemy of the Asuras. Guhashayaha. He is the super soul within the core of everyone's heart. Tatmula, taking shelter at his lotus feet. Devata. The demigods exist. Sarva. All of them. Saishvara. Including Lord Shiva. Sat Chaturmukha. As well as Lord Brahma. Who has four faces. I am. This is. Vai. Indeed. Tat Vada Upayaha. The only means of killing him. Vishnu. Yat. Which. Rishinam. Of great sages. Saintly persons. Or Vaishnavas. Vihinshanam. Suppression of all kinds of persecution. In translation, the whole verse, Lord Vishnu, the super soul within the core of everyone's heart, is the ultimate enemy of the Asuras and is therefore known as Asuradvit. He is the leader of all the demigods because all the demigods, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, exist under his protection. The great saintly persons, sages, and Vaishnavas also depend upon him. To persecute the Vaishnavas, therefore, is the only way to kill Vishnu. So, let's repeat it. Lord Vishnu,
Lord Vishnu,
the super soul within the core of everyone's heart, is the ultimate enemy of the Asuras, and is therefore known as Asuradvit. He is the leader of all the demigods, because all the demigods, including Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, exist under his protection. The great saintly persons, sages and Vaishnavas, also depend on him. To persecute the Vaishnavas, therefore, is the only way to kill Vishnu. Jai purport. Vaishnavan Rasi Si Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Should we charade this out? Yes, okay. Is that all right? Okay. The demigods and the Vaishnavas especially are part and parcel of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Because they are always obedient to his orders. Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Siddha Pashyant Suryaha. The demoniac followers of Kamsa thought that if the Vaishnavas, saintly persons and sages were persecuted, the original body of Vishnu would naturally be destroyed. Thus, they decided to suppress Vaishnavism. The Asuras perpetually struggle to persecute the Vaishnavas because they do not want Vaishnavism to spread. Vaishnavas preach only devotional service, not encouraging karmis, jnanis, and yogis. Because if one must liberate oneself from material conditional life, one must ultimately become a Vaishnava. Our Krishna consciousness movement is directed with this understanding. And therefore, the Asuras always try to suppress it. Jai, thank you very much. So in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, considered to be the face of the Lord, and it's nice to have, you know, him, his face in our face. There's intimacy here. great in the Lord's pastimes, but this is not devoid of some kind of disruption, upheaval. The pastimes of the Lord include violence. Sometimes it's hard to tell people that we are a peaceful society, because when you hand them a book and show them the pictures, one after the other, it's, some avatar slaying another, like Asura. So you have to give a long purport. Here we have Kamsa, who is one of the biggest of all time rascals. And yet, there's a soft side to him. When the first child was delivered to him by Vasudeva, first baby, born of Devaki, begotten by Vasudeva, Kamsa looked at it, his heart was somewhat softened. And he said, this is not a child for me to worry about. It's the eighth child that I fear, that is my challenge. So Vasudeva, go. Take him back. It's okay. TK. Very well. Go away. And so Vasudeva did. But immediately people jumped on him, on Kamsa. And they were the Asuras, bad advisors. And they flipped his mind around. Those people's minds get flipped very easy. The classic example in the Ramayana, the story of Mandara and how she flipped the mind of Kaikeyi, one of the wives of Dasharatha. Nice to see you. And it took a little while, but Mandara was very expert at doing this. And Kaikeyi was very happy about the announcement that Ram was to be installed as the king of the world, and saw Ram to be like her son, Bharat. In fact, it's mentioned, they said, this is my son, Bharat, and this is Ram. It's like right hand, left hand. And they work so well together. They love each other, there's no problem. But Mandara, who was sort of very ill-intended, and perhaps she was concerned about her salary or cut pay or some package deal would come to her that, okay, we won't need you anymore, there's going to be a new king. She decided to pollute the mind of Kaikeyi, and she did it very well. It's the most exciting, chilling part of the whole Ramayana to me. That's a real drama, that part. And there's other, stories about people's minds flipping. Let's go to the Ramayana again. I always thought it was very funny. Shurtanaka, who lost her husband because her brother, Ravana, had gone on a hunting expedition and saw something moving. Like, you meet these hunters, right? Some of them are in the deep south. So, what do you hunt? Anything that moves. So you have Ravana, he saw something moving, and he released his arrow, and it hit straight for Shupanaka's husband, and so she was without a husband. So then she saw Ram in the forest, he was in exile, said, this is a pretty good partner for me. And then without any protocol, being sort of a wild jungle woman, she just came to Ram and said, I'm really interested. What do you think? Let's get on with it. Ram then said, there's a problem here. I'm already taken. Here's my beautiful wife, Sita, and we're very happily married. So Shurtanaka was very disturbed about that. But then Ram was playing a little game, and he flipped her mind a little bit and said, but there is Lakshman, he's my brother. And he's pretty good looking, strong, and he's not married, by the way. I'm sure something could happen here. And so immediately she took interest. Woo, her mind had flipped over, not bad. And then Lakshman went on to say, you don't want me. I'm just a slave. slave to my brother, Ram. You don't want to get married to a slave, do you? I'm sure if you just put out all the ammunition possible, Ram will reconsider. So she's like, okay, let me try. So her mind was changed. The rest of it is that, as you know, that how the story goes. Sita was considered to be in the way of the whole thing. If she was eliminated, she could have, Shubhamika could have both guys. So she made the attack against Sita, and then she lost various parts of her body because of Lakshman's sharp knife. Okay, so Kamsa, his mind is flipping, it's changing, and that is the nature of the mind, chanchalam. Chanchalam is like the mind is like money. Does money ever stay in your pocket? Or let me say plastic card. I mean, you know, so many people, every day, millions of people snip their cards, whether it's credit card, whatever, you know, they cut them, tear them, or if there's cash. And these days, you can't, cash doesn't work in many places anymore. But does it ever stay in one place for a very long time? Especially now with some kind of recession, you know, everyone's feeling the pinch a little bit. Chanchalam is like Lakshmi, it just doesn't stay in one place very long. So the mind is just like that. Chanchalam himana krishna pramati balabhadridam. Stated by the Lord himself. Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, the mind is all over the place, all over the universe. And Kamsa is no exception. Part of the Leela, Krishna's very intimate Leela, is that Kamsa was to change his mind and listen to the rascals, the Asuras. And what's the intent of the Asuras? It's to exterminate the Vaishnavas and anything that represents Vaishnavism. You know, the symbols of Vaishnavism are the cows, the Brahmins, yajnas, maybe tilak marks, japa beads in very modern day context, and drums, you know, mridangas, right? These are destroy any of these images. And this is what the history Prabhupada explains is eternal. It seems to repeat itself, and how tyrannical rulers or dictators will come and try to make some kind of conquest, destroy what is there in the empire they've attacked, try to bury, burn, destroy, rape, loot, everything, and try to bury the history of their people that they've just attacked. That seems to be the way of many, let's say, scrupulous personality. So Kamsa is one of them. And that was his intent. After having just a few words with his friendly committee, his mind was changed. And then he was up to his usual shenanigans. There are others who follow the same suit, and that is like Hiranyakashipu and others. Kamsa wasn't totally an unintelligent person. He understood things, and similarly his comrades understood the way the world works. They understood that for a Vaishnava, Vishnu is everything. Vishnu is the life and soul. Get rid of Vishnu and you'll get rid of the Vaishnavas, or get rid of the Vaishnavas, you'll get rid of Vishnu, in the same way that Shubhamika, she had this idea. She told Ravana, you know, if you were to steal Sita away, you would kill Ram's heart and you would be clear. So that seems to be the intention, is to break the back or kill the heart of the soft-hearted. And that program has been going on for a very long time. For those of us who joined ISKCON in the early days, didn't we not feel a little bit like the world was against us? Perhaps we impose that on ourselves more than the reality was. We were feeling that we had developed this them and us mentality. And to some degree, Prabhupada fueled this because he was saying that there is a psychological warfare, and there's no doubt about it that, well, there's, if you look at 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's divine demonic nature. It might like spur on a kind of a black and white kind of vision on things. But there clearly is a world that we live in that is self-centered and not focused on the absolute. And we see some of the results of that. We see people are not really very happy folks. People are not very, let's say, balanced in their outlook on life. There's people are constantly worried about their kids being in the wrong company, and after that's happened, if it happens, how low will they go? And how far will they be distracted? And there's financial considerations and concerns that tax the brain, and people are very stressed. It's a stressed world. And there's no very little mechanism for coping with it. But if you have the spiritual side of life, if that's part of your life's equation, then you've got something to work with. And people just don't have that now. So, Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, the world is, it's a tough place. It's very difficult. It's like a mountain to climb. But if you have Krishna in your life, then it's possible to climb the mountain. It's possible to deal with it. Krishna gives tools. You know, how can somebody make this book stand, you know, without tools? It's more than abracadabra, you know, or Hare Krishna, boom. It's tools that are required to make things. It's tools that are required to break things even, but tools are required. And so when those tools are broken by people who know who have learned how to cope, then this is a great tragedy, and this is what sometimes is the attempt. Oh, we were hearing about, I'm sure you're all aware, you know, trying to ban the Bhagavad Gita in Siberia, was it? Russia. And you know, the Bhagavad Gita is our tool. It's our lifeline. It's our song. Don't kill our song. When you kill, destroy our music, you've certainly killed us. So these kind of things are going on. It's a famous mantra by Prabhupada. These things are going on. And as Kali Yuga advances, there will be a bit more of this. So going back to the early days, you know, we felt that we had a job to do, and that was to attack the world, or at least the atheistic world. Again, fueled or fired by Prabhupada, and some of his last words were before he left us. He said, "I just want to destroy this world of agnosticism and atheism." You know, he came across like a warrior, you know. And so in the early days, we felt to be like warrior-like. And our weapons were the books, and we had the mantras, and we had prasadam. We liked all these weapons, these tools. They were great. They worked for us, and they can work for others as well. And as time went on, as the world became smaller, I guess you could say, more like that global village that people talk about, and people get exposed to various cultures and the mosaic experience, people, you know, we became part of that mosaic experience. We became accepted by the general public to a large degree in many parts of the world, thanks to the diaspora of, you know, India, Hinduism, maybe a little bit, yoga culture. You know, it all helps out. And surely Prabhupada came at the right time when there was a sense of openness. And some people reacted. And three phases he talked about that our movement would go through. First, they would kind of laugh at us, then they would persecute us, and thirdly, they would adore us. You know? He talked about three phases that our movement would go through. And, you know, I guess you can debate as to which phase we're at right now. I don't think we have to be defensive. I don't think there's people coming with their rifles, coming from the hills, you get, you know, and threatening us. I don't think it's like that. People have gained a sense of decency and been able to understand us, that by dint of our behavior, it's our behavior usually that wins people over, not always by what you say. A famous line by Francis of Assisi, preach, and if you have to, use some words. Meaning, it's by your actions. Actions speak louder than words. Be the real acharya. You know? Speak by being the example. So the more that we can, you know, demonstrate good behavior, the more people will really appreciate, you know, what our movement and mission is all about. That doesn't mean, however, that we shouldn't have fire, that we can be lackadaisical. And so we've got a nice program, and I'll lay down, stretch out on my lawn chair. That's not what it means. We have to keep the mission in mind. And the mission means, you know, you got tools, you got weapons. Get out there. The world is still bad. It's still bad. And it's Maya in your face. And it gets worse as time goes on. As people get desensitized and, you know, whatever it is, what's that word I'm thinking about where they block, you know, something is just not decent. Oh, what's the word? Censorship. Where is it? Hello? Does it exist? Not much. So we're being forced to see everything, hear everything. And we're hearing from, well, characters like advisors of King Kamsa. We don't need this kind of culture. Well, the message is, we don't need this kind of culture where God is worshipped. We don't need this kind of culture where you take up some inconveniences to help others. We don't need this. Think of yourself. You're important. Well, you are it. Some advertisements to join the army here in the States, just because everyone's sort of a bit egocentric these days, and I'm number one, right? Community's number two, if there is one even. to gain some interest in joining the forces, an ad came out there with a guy with fatigues on, and all loaded down with all kinds of stuff, you know, and he's going through the jungle, trudging forward, and says, I am the army. Me alone. It kind of caters to the ego, the way things are, isn't it? In analyzing Kamsa's situation, indeed he was part of a community. He had that good fortune. There can't be any worse scenario than not being part of a community, than living solo in this world, in solitude. And yet he had a community. But it was the wrong community. And, you know, it's one of the big decisions we have to make in life. Who am I going to associate with? Like when you're young, growing up. Who are going to be my friends? You look around. Do you remember going to the classroom? Can you go back 30 years, 40 years? 50? Oh, I'm getting old. Okay, how many? Go back. Remember what it was like. So I have to pick and choose my friends. Right? That's a big deal for our second generation devotees. Because the big challenge when you're second generation is that you have to make a choice. This was given to you. Maybe forced down your throat, maybe a little bit here and there, once in a while. So then you have to pick and choose. I mean, this is a phenomena. I've been on the bus tour for 7 summers, a little bit here and there, with Manaram. And when everyone gets on the bus in the beginning, it's like the first day at school. And for others, hey, oh, this is it. This is what I am. I am the life of the book. This is my lifeline. It's Krishna consciousness all the way. But some of our young folks, they're not quite sure. They had an intersection in their life, and that's okay. Because those of us who had our choice, we were at intersection in our life. We had to make big decisions also, radical decisions. So what's really interesting to see the end result is that it's through friendship and sense of community and feeling good about, you know, the feel-good experience of being in the kirtans and having great prasadam and being all over, seeing the whole countryside, you know. In the end, it's quite remarkable what happens. Maybe there can be, I'm sure there's testimonials here, because the bulk of our bus groups hails from Florida, right? But, you know, it's like the young folks, our young folks, they have to make a big decision. And we can never forget that. And it's a tough one. So Kamsa, he was in a position to make a decision, just like Duryodhan, and he had to make a decision. He had a decision whether to take Krishna or his army of 1 million people. Now, anybody who's materially calculating would consider, oh, I should take the 1 million men. I take this guy who was not going to take up any weapons, and for 1 million men, will be fully armed. And Duryodhan, thinking in terms of, you know, physical power, physical strength, brute strength, he was so happy when Arjuna made the first choice, I want you, Krishna. And Duryodhan didn't really have to say much. Wow, there's no option here. I like the no option program. I got the 1 million men. Jai! I guess you can say he didn't have much of a choice, but most of us do have to make choices, and no one's forced to stay with the Krishna culture if they don't want to. But when you look around and make some comparisons, with all thy faults, Hare Krishna movement, ISKCON, we still love thee. After all, what's perfect? Is there anything perfect other than Krishna? You can say it's near, but I like the sound of that bird. But if I go and wallow around in some of the waters around here, I might meet one of those guys with big teeth, dentures. So it's all, you know, the world in which we live, certainly full of duality. It's sweet and it's not sweet. Harshashoka. Nice and not nice. Blessings and curses. How many stories do we have here in the Bhagavatam expressing the dualities of this world? Oh, so many curses. Everybody's cursing everybody. Sounds like difficult times. Satya Yuga. Satya Yuga just said, I don't think I want to be there. People still curse now, but they don't have the same Brahma Tejas, that ability. But they still curse. They use four-letter words. Anymore. They crucify. Other things. But things were very severe in the past. From the highest planet to the lowest planet, places of misery where there's dualities. Birth and death are there. So we just have to be convinced. Kamsa, fortunately, was a great devotee, and he played the role in a drama, Krishna's drama. Krishna was the director, producer, and all that stuff. And Kamsa played the bad guy. And when we assemble a play, we put it together, we're always considering, you know, who can play what roles. And I usually have, when there's a few people who are out there, young people, usually it is, say, can I play the demon? Usually it's first choice. We've been in some plays together, right? And so that's what, everybody wants to be the bad guy. I don't know why we relate to the bad guys. It's just more interesting. Perhaps we identify with Tamagun. The destructive nature. Well, that's her comfort zone, after all. You know? And so, Satvagun, oh, it's too soft, it's too boring, too bland. You gotta throw some chilies in there, make it exciting. Put some hot sauce. I think we need to think a little different. And there is something very attractive about the angelic culture. The angelic culture that Srila Prabhupada established for us. There's something very nice about it. And it's not devoid of the other aspects. You know, the demons are there. Recently we did a play, and people were saying, oh, there's too much violence. It's so, I don't know, we can't get away from it. It's all over the place. Hare Krishna. You know, but we have to realize that violence is represented as challenges in this world, and you have to just know how to deal with it. We can't be naive and say it's all that. Sun shining, birds chirping, everything's hunky-dory. It's not what it's all about. It's about difficult things and how are you going to deal with it. So that's what Prabhupada gave to us. He gave us a culture and he gave us the equipment to be able to deal with the tough times. And he certainly wanted us to exercise patience and tolerance and, you know, those kind of virtues. And sometimes we find that it doesn't happen so well. We're not so good at that. Slight provocation, slight difficulty, and maybe it's the North American in us. We just quit so easy. Walk away, turn our backs, instead of facing it and dealing with it and, you know, trying to make amends, you know. So, how can we learn patience if there's no difficulty, isn't it? So I think one of devotees, you know, in my travels, devotees love to quote Queen Kunti, one of our super duper Matajis of all times. You know, he said, "La Vipada, come on. I'll take you on. I'll take on the calamities. I'll take the difficulties. The difficulties are welcome. We invite you. Because when there are difficulties, we are pressurized. We're forced to think of you, oh my Lord, Krishna. And when we think of you, then we get out of that spinning program. That cycle that goes on, birth and death, we get liberated. So let the troubles come. Let it be difficult. It's okay. And you don't have to invite them. They'll just come of their own course. No invitation cards need to be sent out there. No RSVPs, nothing. No additional notes. Nothing needs to be said and done. It just comes at you like the waves on the ocean. They just keep coming. And another one. So when they just be ready for it. Be ready and use the equipment. And use it well. It's one thing to have the tools. Do you know how to use them? Do you know how to use them? We've got japa beads. Do we know how to use them? We know the chanting. It's three words. It can't be anything more simple, but we're expected to get kind of to go deep with it and intimate with it. Not an easy task. So, Vaishnavism, maybe things are a little comfortable now. Maybe there will be times in the coming days, futures, months, years, where it will be challenged. And certainly atheism is taking a hold in the world. And are you comfortable? Are we comfortable with that? No? So, there's propaganda out there and to promote that cause. And so we, in the same way, must take propaganda in the converse way. Just put it out there. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's the source of all. And be very intelligent about it, how we approach folks. And again, actions speak louder than words. So thank you very much. Those are a few reflections on this verse from this fabulous segment of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And Hari Bol. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Maharaj, thank you for coming.
No, thank you.
Maharaj, I'm not real familiar with it, but I always, there's that part in there where when Kamsa doesn't kill Vasudeva's first child, that doesn't Narada Muni come in there and, you know, because he wants to stir the pot? So,
right.
So there's Kamsa's advisors and then there's also Narada Muni in there. So what? Right. How do we take that? Because it seems like Narada.
I think you answered the question. It was inevitable that children would be slain, Vasudeva and Devaki's children. And I guess it's Narada Muni's position is, come on, why delay? Let's get on with it. On with the show. Come on. And so his position is very interesting. He's definitely there to stir up things, to shake some trees and get things moving. He's a mover and a shaker. And since it's scripted, you know, that these children would perish, and we know by whose order. So Narada Muni was just, you know, he said, forget the commercials. Let's get on with the movie. Let's get on with the play. No intermission. Come on. So he plays a major part in the pastimes of the Lord. And, well, you're right. It almost seems like he has an alignment or an alliance with the bad guys. But that's why some people might get very bewildered about these particular pastimes. And that's why we have to understand Narada Muni's position. He's got a very important role to play in accelerating the pastimes of the Lord. Let's move it on. And we can appreciate that. Like if you spend any time in India and, you know, you want things to happen, you're just being kind of like an American. Let's go. Let's go. Actually, I think we should take to heart Narada Muni's position more. I think he's very Germanic, on time, punctual. He moves in there at the right moment. Let's get going, you know? I know that's Tomohar can probably verify this, but on the GBC level, we had our meetings, you know, I can remember when I first got involved, and there was some chronic latecomers to the meetings. Who was it? Is that what you're asking? Did somebody? Can't say. But then it got improved. We had one devotee and he was German. He was the chairman that year. And he says, be on time. Because it's very un-German not to be on time. So that stirred up a little shakti in all of us. And so it helped. And you've been reminding each other. Because if it's going to be a problem on that level, it'll be a problem on all other levels. And we have that. That's a little bit of a phenomenon in our culture, to be kind of late. Am I right about that? Is a lie? Light, light. What kind of lie? Big one. It's an elephant lie. So, Narada Muni plays that very important part. To come in at the right time, you know. Right on cue. His entrances and his exits are perfect. When you think about it. Thanks, bro. I hope that, that does it. Thanks for bringing it up because it forced me to think a little bit. Anybody else got some?
And so in this world, those three big words are, I love you. And it's a phenomenal amount of books and literature and feelings, and everything is heightened by those three words. They can take that for centuries, forever. There's that. So it's, would you say that particular, those three words Prabhupada said there really isn't any love in this world. But if we could, if that's the case, and if we transferred that to Hare Krishna and Ram, then that would make the world very different.
Thank you. And, I mean, there is love in this world. It's just tucked away. It's hidden, that's all. It's there. We just need to scratch the surface a little bit. But maybe we don't scratch enough. Nityasiddha Krishna Prema, love of God, is there. I think when you get into a room with people and you share some messages from Bhagavad Gita, many people, they'll get it. You just have to sit down and talk with them, create a nice atmosphere, and they'll get it. They'll understand it. Because in the inner or deeper recesses of the heart, love is there. But it becomes, the love is because it's very covered over, very buried under. Therefore, the chanting is necessary. And just do it nice and loud. Brings out the best in everybody. Yesterday we had a chanting party at the market square. Where was it? The farmer's market, Gainesville. It was so much fun. It's so much fun. People came with their everything, guitars, flutes, and it was just, they started to pick, as soon as we got there, we started chanting, and the people started to pick up their hula hoops and swirl around. But not before that. It was just, you know, so nice. So terrific. Anything else, Prabhu? Yes.
The great kings that protected, and we think of Satyuga, and then we look at Kali Yuga becoming so degraded, but it seems like even at that time there were kings that were persecuting, killing babies, so many atrocities going on. So how we tend to want to look at the past, some kind of nostalgia, either the far past or even
the good old days sort of thing.
But doesn't seem much different.
Yeah, I think I'm supposed to repeat the question. So Vishwambhu is just saying that we sometimes look at the past, we look at the annals of the Bhagavatam, and we see that there's all these incredible stories, and many of them are have a lot of violence in them, there's a lot of killing going on. And also we look at Kali Yuga and we see, well, what's the difference? And what's the point in looking in the past? It just seems like there's not much to be learned, perhaps something like that, right? So it's true, it can be a little bewildering, but these stories that we hear about are unique. They do have to do, it is Krishna who's directing some drama here. And for various reasons. I'd say for you to compare the two worlds, then and now, there's very much an increase of degradation overall. And when you look at the protocol and the etiquette that was exercised in the past, it definitely was another world. It was a heavenly world in the past, for sure. But because it is the material world here and there, we do have some instances of skirmishes and difficulties. And you know, like even in our own, when you, in our kind of like Western history, people always remember the wars. And I took one flight to Europe about a year and a half ago, and next to me was a couple of people, there was both a couple of school teachers who have a Scandinavian background, and they admitted, we're Vikings. And they said, well, you know, the usual portrayal of Vikings, they're all warmongering people with horns and red beards and, you know, out in the ocean, conquering everybody. So, no, that's not what it was. Our history is not really about that. Most of us Vikings were farmers. We were very peaceful. What you hear about is just, you know, just the occasional flare-up of some, you know, war that went on. And just like everyone's emulating the pirates, you know, Blackbeard. Didn't he land here somewhere? Blackbeard? What's the history? He ended up somewhere. you know, the one eye, one arm, and one leg. Like some character, you know, and somehow other people gravitate to that kind of lifestyle, even though he was just one out of a million, a billion maybe. Somehow or other, we just always identify with what was an upheaval in society. But in Satyuga, it was such a long period, and in general, it was a very peaceful time. So we just kind of put the spotlight under the gruesome elements of the past. That's one way to answer your question. Anybody else want to contribute? Oh, Gopal wants to contribute? What do you have to say, Gopal? As usual. Did you want? Yes.
Very good answer, Maharaj. If we learn the symptoms of the other ages, Kali Yuga, Treta, Dwapara, and so forth, once we understand the symptoms, then we see these are very minuscule events, one in a million or one in a billion, mm-hmm. not regularly. So you're very right, really.
Well, Srila Prabhupada informs us that Satyuga starts off practically clear, like pure, and then as time evolves, lapses, each yuga, successive yuga, gets more and more degraded by percentage, and so we end up with what we have right now, where there's multiple wars, and hot wars and cold wars, and perhaps lukewarm ones too, in between, all kinds of wars. And there's very little peace even in the home. That's Kali Yuga. Okay, you want something more?
I was just going to add, I was listening to Gopi Parananda, some of his lectures, and he was pointing out that in the Bhagavatam there are these stories, and primarily they are about kings and kshatriyas, because they're more exciting.
Mm-hmm.
He said if they read about the Brahmin, he sat down, did ajman, and meditated. There's really not much there. Yeah. So people need to be entertained, was his point. Mm-hmm. And so these stories, as you were saying, are kind of like that. They pick out the ones that, you know, put the spotlight on the flare.
Yeah, I think the biggest televised program ever in the history of television was when, what's his name? And what's her name? Got married in England. Diane. What? Well, no. The recent marriage. William and really terrible. They're horrible. Obviously. Not following the news. But, you know, billions of people watch that show. They still want monarchy. It's, you know, it's fairy tale-ish, you know. In the palace, there's always intrigue. There's a powerful man. He has many wives, lots of children. Or at the Bhagavatam talks, they usually don't have children. Succession problems here. And some sadhu comes in and offers some kheer, and then the kids start coming out. It's all very intriguing. It's true, you know. Life on the kshatriya position is very exciting. It's a big drama. Kshatriyas are beautiful, strong people with some moral fiber in their lives, and so it's interesting. So there's a little bit of a Brahmin in them, and a little bit of maybe Shudra in there. The fighting nature is there too. People are not familiar with these stories so much, but they certainly are familiar with superheroes. And one thing about superheroes is that they're usually powerful, strong, they have lots of shakti, they help people in distress, and they usually have some paramour, but they never have sex. And there's been like major, I know there's some out there, some of the campuses across North America, they study superheroes, the modern-day superheroes, and they compare them to the demigods from the Vedas, and the other gods from the Greek period, from that mythology, and they compare them. They put so many parallels there. Because it's fun. It's fun. It's exciting. Their lifestyles are totally colorful. Yeah. But the best that we can get out of these stories, when the king finally retires, goes to the forest, it all ends up on a happy note. And all the passions are subdued, and that's where it's supposed to end up. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.